Hi, welcome to the Hungarian Living Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Szabó-Vas. Our goal is to discover, celebrate, and share Hungarian heritage and encourage you to do it too. We'll touch on food, travel, history, music, and language, and share stories from our listeners. We're glad you're here. This is a podcast where we'll encourage you to dig deeper to learn about your Hungarian heritage in a variety of ways. We'll have thought-provoking conversations and share resources. So whether you know a little or a lot about being Hungarian, this is the place to be. Welcome to another episode of Hungarian Living. Today, I'm visiting with my friend Jennifer Jacobs, who runs Jacobs Heritage Farm in Northeast Ohio. Welcome to the podcast, Jennifer. Can you tell us a bit about the history of your farm?
Thanks so much, Liz. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. My farm was built in 1859, and it has been in my family since 1919. So that's 101 years, four generations. My great-grandparents, Frank and Agnes Jacobs, bought the farm shortly after they immigrated to the USA from Hungary. They moved to the Akron, Ohio area because of the large Hungarian community here, and there's still a large community here. And they farmed here just like they had in the old country. They didn't change anything, any of their ways. They never learned to speak English.
Wow.
And they didn't really need to, since most of the people they knew were Hungarian, so they didn't really have to change. And this was mainly a crop farm. They grew peppers and cucumbers, the same ones they would have grown over there. And they took those up to the big farm markets in Cleveland to sell.
Okay.
And the farm was mainly known for its peppers.
All right.
And when their son, my grandfather, got married, his wife moved to the farm. And Vilma was also a Hungarian immigrant. And they had two children, my Uncle Frank and my mother, Mary.
Okay. So the farm has been in operation in some way since 1919. And I remember you telling me this before, that your mom wasn't so crazy about the older traditions and the farm traditions, but you have the opportunity and the inclination to make that connection. And so you really have kind of brought it back to at least some level of how it used to be. And maybe you have some different interests, but you definitely have kind of revitalized or also continued, but also put your own spin on it.
That's very true. My mom did not like farming at all growing up. She didn't like anything about it. She didn't like the animals. She didn't like the crops. She wanted a more modern life. She wanted to be a modern girl. So she kind of rejected that lifestyle. But when she got married, she built her house on the farmland. And I grew up right next to the old farmhouse that I live in now, where my grandparents were growing up, and they're very Hungarian. I used to come over here every day to eat all the good food and the chicken paprikash. And I've been living in this farmhouse since 1998, so about 22 years. And the farmland itself, my uncle turned into a golf course for about 30 years, and then he got older and golf became less popular, and I gradually started turning the land back into a farm. I now own all 25 acres, and it means a lot to me that I've been able to keep it in the family. And I farm because I love it, but I also farm partly in tribute to my hardworking family who tended this land before I did.
Well, it's a great connection to have. You know that they've worked the land, and you can find evidences of that. Obviously, you were there, you know that, but you also, I'm sure you find some treasures from time to time that were things that they had marked or done or written.
Everywhere. I have so many pieces of the past on this farm, and I love old things in general, but the things that connect me to my family, I adore. And every time I find a new milk bottle or something in the ground, I just absolutely love it.
That's fun. It's like a little treasure
every time. It is. I'm still finding things.
Wow. Well, after 101 years, you should be finding things,
Yeah.
That's a long time.
That's true.
So what are some of your favorite ways of connecting with your Hungarian heritage?
My favorite ways of connecting with my heritage, of course, are through my farm. I think it gives me kind of a unique perspective on my heritage. A lot of people are kind of disconnected from the farming aspects of it. And there's just a million small things that connect me to my Hungarian roots and with my family. When I was a little girl, I used to speak a mixture of English and Hungarian from spending so much time with my grandparents, and they were always going back and forth between the two languages. My grandma used to yell at my grandpa saying, "You speak English, the little girl won't know how to speak the English."
How sweet.
And I'd be talking to people who didn't know Hungarian, and I'd say, "Oh, look at the pretty mochka. Look at the cat." My sentences would be mixed up between the two languages, but I think my Hungarian was better then than it is now. And my grandma used to tell me stories in her broken English. My favorite stories are always about the farm. I'd always ask her to tell me about the farm because it wasn't a farm when I was a kid. They had quit farming.
Oh, okay. So they farmed, then they stopped farming.
Yeah.
Because your uncle had the golf course.
Yeah.
Maybe in there. Okay.
They got older and farming wasn't really a viable option for an income. Once got into like the 1970s, crop farms like this weren't doing so well. So the land kind of sat for a little bit before my uncle turned it into a golf course.
Okay.
And my grandma would tell me about all the things they grew. Oh, Kishlan. Little girl, we grow a lot of things. Paprika, uborka, strawberry, huckleberry. She'd go on and on about all the things they used to grow, but my favorite parts are about the animals. I've always loved animals. That's why primarily I have this as a livestock farm now rather than a crop farm. I really enjoy raising animals here. And I have horses, sheep, pigs, a couple of goats, chickens, quail, geese, pigeons, honeybees, you name it.
They can find a happy home with you.
Yeah. It's quite the menagerie, but most that I raise are similar to what you'd find on a traditional Hungarian farm. And this isn't really something that I did consciously at first, but one day I kind of looked around at my sheep and my bees, and it kind of clicked that it really is a heritage farm. I don't think it was something I was trying to do at first, but then as I realized that it was kind of taking that shape, it's something that I made an effort to keep doing in tribute to my family and my roots.
So when did you start, like when you first moved back to the farmhouse,
mm-hmm.
did you start with any animals at that point, or did you...
At first, I only had the house, and then eventually I had the barn, and then I got some chickens and a little bit more land, and okay. The land that I had slowly started growing versus the golf course. The more land I got, the more animals I added. I got a couple sheep. Next thing you know...
Give her some land, she's got to get some animals.
Uh-huh. It's always something, and I do love them.
So it wasn't necessarily, you know, this intentional thing. It was just you kind of, like you said, you kind of looked around and you thought, huh, well, this is what this is developing into. So you kind of happened into it.
In a way, yeah. I think mm-hmm. it's in my blood. My family, my father's side of the family is Hungarian too, but I mean, they've all been farming the same way for hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years. Many, many generations of my family have been farming before me. In the old country, they farm to survive. I feel like I have the push of all those generations behind me. Like my blood, my essence has been living a certain way for so many years, and it's not an easy force to stop. I think that it's what I was built for.
It's like in your DNA.
I think it is. once it's harvest season, there's something in me that clicks and like, oh, I better get this food preserved for winter, you know? And I think a lot of that is biological. It's a survival instinct in a way.
And I do think that gets passed down, you know, even if you were, maybe the farm wasn't a farm when you were a kid, but you probably couldn't take the farm out of your grandma. And she was probably doing all those things also, even if she had a small garden, mm-hmm. you know, she was still doing those things. And so those smells and those behaviors mm-hmm. are just what marks the seasons
yep.
for a farmer.
It really is. It's very seasonal.
Okay. Well, one project we have worked together on is this bull's blood wine jelly. So Egerbikkjeveer, or bull's blood from Eger, is a famous dry red wine from the Eger wine region in northern Hungary. It is worthy of its own podcast and will be the topic of one in the future. But let me just mention here that there is a huge range of quality of Egerbikkjeveer. There is the inexpensive communist version, which seems to be what we typically can get our hands on or most easily get our hands on in the USA. But there are some excellent Egerbikkjeveers created in Hungary. And as grape production varies from year to year, no two wines are alike. So you might love an Egerbikkjeveer from a certain winemaker in one year and not be crazy about the release of the following year. And this project with the bull's blood wine jelly utilizes the bull's blood wine that comes into the U.S. and is fine to drink, but it is also spectacular when made into jelly. And that's where you come in.
I love creating things that connect to my heritage. And as I mentioned, I have bees. I make honey. I've made my own paprika powder. I've made lekvar with both prune and apricot. I braid garlic, which actually I was doing this afternoon.
Oh, nice. I still have mine hanging in. Yes, I love it.
Awesome. So when you suggested that I look into the bull's blood wine jelly, I was definitely intrigued and interested. So I made a batch and I was absolutely hooked. The sugar in the jelly just really brings out the flavor of the wine. It's a beautiful deep red jelly.
So what are some of your favorite ways of eating it? Because, you know, when I saw that this was an option to make, but then I thought, man, what should we do for, you know, what do you do with it? You know, it seems interesting to have it as a peanut butter and jelly, mm-hmm. jelly, but you know, there's other ways of doing it too. So what have you done?
There is, I think the best way is probably with cheese and crackers. Because it is a wine jelly, I think that it just absolutely begs to be served with hors d'oeuvres. I went through a phase where I was addicted to eating it with bagels and cream cheese. I've made Hungarian-style jelly noodles with it, just for something a little fun and different. Because I love noodles in general, but with the jelly, it's fantastic.
Okay. One of the cheeses I've used to kind of offset it was like a pepper jack or some mm-hmm. kind of warmer cheese, you know, something that kind of has a little kick to it, because then the hot really goes well with the sweet.
I love that too. I like the spicy sweet combination.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes really well together.
Yep.
So you mentioned that you have Mongolitsa pigs. So let's talk a little bit about that.
I do raise the Mongolitsas, which are an old Hungarian breed of pig. Mine are swallow bellies, which means they're kind of black and have a white belly when they're not covered in mud, which is rare.
They love their mud.
They love mud. And they're also known as woolly pigs because they have that long curly hair. They're really unusual looking pigs. Some people have told me that they're ugly, but I don't know. I think they're pretty cute. It could just be me.
Well, I do. There are people that really just love them just because they're unusual. So,
yep.
You're not alone for sure.
They're really an old breed. They're originally created to have high amounts of lard, which was sought after by the aristocracy in the 1800s in Hungary. There were some in Austria as well. And when lard became less popular in the 1900s, these beautiful pigs nearly became extinct. Fortunately, there were major conservation efforts in Europe that brought them back from the brink. They were eventually imported to the USA, and now we know that lard is not as bad for you as we once thought. It's a clean, pure, whole food that is so much easier for your body to metabolize than the processed fats that are in a lot of food everywhere these days. So lard is where it's at.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a big part of the Hungarian diet, traditionally. And mangalitsa pork is not the other white meat. It's red and it's dark and it's flavorful and the fat is so soft and it's completely different from the American commercial pork that we're all used to.
I did not know that. Okay, so I'm going to have to get my hands on some true mangalitsa meat.
Yep.
And give it a shot. I'm sure I've had it in Hungary, but once it's cooked, I don't know that I would have definitely noticed the difference, but for sure, Americans think of pork as the other white meat. I mean, that's how it's billed for sure. I'll have to do some comparison.
Absolutely. I've done that myself. I've done the pork chop taste test, which that's my favorite cut is the pork chops. It's actually closer to a steak in a way.
Okay. I've
cooked just plain American white meat pork chop next to the deep red mangalitsa pork chop, and it's just a huge difference. You don't have that hard piece of fat. The fat just kind of melts in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And the meat is so tender. It's not dry.
Yes, I have found that lately more and more that it seems to be very dry with pork. So, okay, well, we'll have to give that a try. Have you had a chance to visit Hungary yet?
I visited Hungary when I was 4 years old. My family had an opportunity to take my grandparents back to the old country, which is especially important to my grandma. She wanted to see her cousins and some of her family. We visited the villages where my grandparents grew up. And my grandpa still had family in Turekopani and Somogy. The village where my grandma grew up was actually in Yugoslavia at the time because some of the border changes. I'm not even sure what country that is now, but the images that stick in my mind from the trip, of course, are the farms. And not much had changed in the countryside of Hungary since they left it. Water was still drawn from the well. They had fields full of poppies and peppers, grape arbors, and huge pigs. They weren't mangalitsa, but they were enormous. And I was 4 years old, so they seemed especially enormous.
I'm sure.
They were huge. And chickens everywhere. And everywhere I went, everyone fed me amazing chicken noodle soup. Everywhere I went, which was delicious. I still love soup.
Now I have to ask you, do you put chicken feet in your soup?
Of course.
I didn't grow up with that, but I visited one of my relatives and they had chicken feet in the soup. And I thought, you know, people talk about this all the time, but it's in the soup. But I mean, it was fantastic soup.
It was my favorite growing up. My grandma made it for me all the time and I still like it. I think that comes down to not wasting any of the animals, especially if it's an animal you've raised yourself. There's a lot of nutrition there. A lot of people make bone broth these days. And I mean, that's how people got that same nutrition. I mean, they would cook the chicken feet and you get the bone broth, the marrow, and the soup, which is just really good for you.
Well, I love how your life has incorporated so much of your family history of farming in so many visible ways. I love all the things you do and your willingness to experiment with things. And I wonder if your great grandparents had any idea of the impact they had on you. You know, I wonder what they would think of you and your continued connection to your Hungarian heritage. I would imagine that they would be thrilled and honored and proud.
Thanks so much, Liz. That means a lot to me. I would have loved to have met them. I think they were both really interesting people. I can't even imagine what they would think about the world these days.
Oh, well, there is that. But, you know, every generation doesn't necessarily know who they're influencing in the future.
Yeah.
You know, they just did what they were doing with their kids, and then their kids did the next thing, you know, so.
Yeah.
To me, it's so fascinating to see the generations impacted in ways unknown, you know, just unknown from the person who is passing it on at to also the person who is the receiver. Just you don't necessarily even know what you're doing that's making the impact. So
that's very true.
So, well, thank you for visiting with me. We will have a link to the places that you can connect with Jennifer in the show notes. Be sure to check out HungarianLiving.com for all the ways to find her on social media. And we will be sure to include information on the farm in case you are looking for some wonderful products and you're in the area near Akron. Is it Copley?
Yes.
Where you're? Okay. So in Copley, Ohio, which is Northeast Ohio.
Just outside of Akron.
Okay, so you can check the show notes and stop in at the farm and pick up some things at the little farm stand. Thanks for visiting, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, Liz.
Hungarian Living is a division of Mudyar Marketing, the Hungarian store, where you can find meaningful gifts with Hungarian style. Check us out at mudyarmarketing.com. And special thanks to Steven Cicek and the Animal Cannibals for the show music. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Hungarian Living, please subscribe and share this podcast with your favorite Hungarian. Check out our show notes for links to resources mentioned in this episode. If you have a question or comment, email us at podcast@hungarianliving.com. We'll catch you next time.